These sweet tarts are good. If
I love me some sweet tart steaks.
If you guys start hearing me be real quiet, it's probably because I'm digging into Ryan's bag of sweet tarts. Okay.
Which are, it's a jumbo bag as sweet tarts go. Like, it's clearly more sweet tarts.
Well, and they're soft and
need.
Chewy sweet tarts.
Yeah, so they're easy to eat.
And it's kind of a step up from my normal...
Regular sweet tarts are hard to eat, like it's a chore or anything.
Can I just be the one to say, we don't have any advertising, and we're of our own free will talking
just
about...
Just talking about sweet tarts. Sweet tarts. So sweet tarts, you want to cut us a check, you knock yourselves out.
Exactly. Anyway, Shane, you had something that you wanted to tell us
about. I do. I have a couple things I want to talk about today before we get to the music. Okay. Well, I had one thing I wanted to discuss, but the other thing, I ran by the 7-Eleven. On the way to your house.
The one 7-Eleven.
Good exercise.
Yes, the one 7-Eleven. And there it was. Yes, I was literally running. But they have, I noticed that they have hot dog flavored potato chips. What? There's something quintessentially American and wrong about that.
Both of those things are true.
Well, and the sad thing is, if growing up in the house that Ryan and I grew up in, we probably would have tried those.
Oh, totally.
Like,
our father would have bought them.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Were they shaped like hot dogs, or they just taste hot dogs?
I guess they taste like hot dogs, but the thing is like, aren't hot dogs really essentially just about the trimmings? I mean,
The lips and assholes.
Yeah, I know, but you don't really think about like hot dog flavor.
Trimmings. As a
vegetarian, are you unable to eat hot dog flavored potato chips?
I don't. If there were actual hot dogs,
and how do you know they're accurate? Like, just
I don't. But you know what? That's funny that you asked that because I had a second where I thought I would flip around and look at the ingredients. Because sometimes, like, they have, like, TGI Fridays.
Take a walk on the wild side.
Because you felt like it was going to be, like, mostly celery in there? Or?
No. Because a lot of times you get chips and shit like that, and it's not really meat flavor. Anyway, moving on. This is the thing I really wanted to talk about.
Can I just... Don't forget where you are, but I just wanted to say, it does remind me of... I caught the late Mitch Hedberg on an old episode of Stern last week, and he was talking about those Fritos with the grill marks on them, the barbecue Fritos, which are still around, and this made me think of that, and I was like, you know, it was like, and of course, the punchline is like, you remember the days, you know, flipping the Fritos over on the grill, which of course nobody does. Anyway, Shane, I'm sorry, go ahead, tell us your
bit. I'm glad that you let us know that nobody actually does that, Kevin.
No one does.
So I was in CVS earlier today, and we're just dropping names everywhere. We're advertising for everybody.
We are.
And they at the counter, they have a bunch of like National Examiner and the Star and National Enquirer. And on the cover of the National Enquirer, and I just want to just share this with you guys, it said, number one, this is the whole country has been talking about this controversy for years now. Andy Griffith, death mystery solved. Really? Because I solved that shit immediately. He was like 92.
Didn't he get old and die?
Yeah. Yeah. When will the senseless killing stop?
It's just splashed on the cover. Like, it takes up the whole cover. These huge letters. Like, this is like, they're cracking the code.
Breaking news.
First Hume Cronin, now this.
Andy Griffith, death mystery solved.
Yeah.
All right. I needed to share that with you guys. Okay. Well,
should we start the show?
Yeah, let's do that. I'm Shane.
I'm Ryan.
I'm Kevin.
Somebody likes it. So I want to, and this could become something or not become something. It could be I probably will semi-regularly introduce this, but today I heard something, and it immediately popped in my head. Somebody likes this, and I was like, "Oh shit, we need to have a semi-regular discussion about
a shitty song."
Well, shitty song or shitty whatever, but in this case, it's Dave Matthews Band. Who listens to that? What is that? Is it
bros?
No. I don't get it. It kind of, it's sort
well,
of,
and there's a certain like pot subculture I think that's into Dave. Like, you know, he's like, he gets us some of the fringe jam.
There's one
shit.
Song by Dave Matthews Band that I really like.
Is it called Silence?
Yeah, I think it was between two tracks, but no. There's one song that I genuinely like. It's off their like first or second record. I can't remember what it's called right now. And you know, had I not been caught unawares, I would have looked it up.
Well, but I wanted to get and had I told you before, you could have had some pat response to what I'm proposing here. But I'm genuinely perplexed. Like he sold many CDs,
and dozens.
At least a dozen, and they've been the highest grossing touring act now for like 20 fucking years, but it's some lowest common denominator ass boring bullshit, in my opinion.
Okay.
Right. Well, I don't disagree. Like, you and I are, we're simpatico on that front. But what are you proposing exactly?
I every so often I'm going to hear a song on the radio and go like, who the fuck listens to this? And then I'm going to talk about it.
Okay.
That's a possibility we can.
Yeah, I'm just.
I mean, the good news
know.
Is we're already talking.
Jason
about
Jason Mraz,
music.
That's another one. Who listens to this stuff?
Yeah, I mean,
look, if
some
I don't,
people.
If
chicks,
I, if true, if I, but if I don't address this in this way, you guys are going to end up having to fucking listen to some of these records.
All right, so we've got a new segment. It's called "Why Does Somebody Like This?"
Well, okay.
And then we wept.
With joy?
Well, it depends on how the segment goes, but sure.
Okay, so let's get on to the real deal.
So something that I would consider not lowest common denominator is this week's record, which I selected.
I would hope that you would think that since you selected it.
Well, I would, yeah. Well,
and before you go into wherever you're going with your opening statement here on the record, I think we ought to remind the audience kind of what we're doing on this round of.
So the original impetus of the podcast was that we would each get together and decide on a record for the next week, or one of us would decide, but it would be a record that none of the three of us knew very well, but has some cultural impact with some people, hence somebody likes it.
It's a very amorphous concept.
Yeah. However, for this round, we're picking records that at least one of us knows and maybe the other two don't know very well. So when it came to me, I decided to pick Yolotengo's Electro Puro, which to me is a genius record. And neither Kevin nor Shane knew very well. So to kick things off, I'll relate a story about how I actually came to know this.
Came to know the record?
The record. I knew who Yolotengo was. Shane and I had actually gone to a show during South By.
I was going to say, you went to me. I had never even listened to them before we went to that show.
No, I hadn't either. I just kind of heard of them, and they were on Matador, which was kind of a fledgling label at the time.
Them and Spoon and Guided by Voices.
Yeah, and Railroad Jerk.
Right, one of these kids is not like the other.
They did not hang around
guy,
for that long.
They just changed the locks in that house, and that guy's like, hey, let me in.
Yeah. No, I mean, and I remember thinking, like, this is calamitous, like, crap, and I wasn't into it, but I guess we all know our friend Cheeto. His then girlfriend at the time, Michelle, had just like she, you know, as is her wont, she was flipping through records at like Sound Exchange or something, and which is a long dead record store in Austin, and really liked the artwork on a Yolotengo record. I don't even know which one it was, but you know, he and I were hanging out one night, and he's like, oh, yeah, Michelle picked up this record. She just liked the artwork, and she really likes the band. It's this band, Yolotengo. And I was like, oh, that's cool. You know, flash forward a couple years, and I was marooned in northern Indiana.
We hear about this from time to time.
It's a painful chapter. But I had, at this time, three jobs and a girlfriend. I don't know how I pulled this off, but one of the jobs, I went out and measured carpets for a carpet store.
Oh God!
Measured like rooms for a carpet store for people who were wanting to get an estimate, and I'd periodically swing into like pawn shops and just pick up random CDs just so I'd have something to listen to in the car. One of them I happened to pick up for like $4 or $5 was this record, Electro Puro. So this will always like give me memories of driving around bumfuck Indiana, going into strangers' homes and measuring carpets, but
so of course you wanted to revisit it.
Well, the reason I wanted to revisit it is because it was like the most genius respite from that, you know, hellhole existence I had for a little bit. And like every time I revisit it, I can't get enough.
We're going to hear from people in Fort Wayne for the Fort Wayne.
There are a lot of very nice people in Fort Wayne, but I do not want to live there.
Well, that's a good record. I remember distinctly you visiting, and we were drinking one night, and
this happens.
And we, yeah, and Ryan is a fan of the music, as am I. And I remember you like you had recorded like some shit on a tape for me or something, and you were just like freaking out and going and rewinding the tape and playing some stuff over and over.
That sounds
again.
Like me.
Yeah, it sounds. You know, this is a while ago. Couldn't really flip on the computer and get on Spotify back then.
Nope. Times have changed.
Why don't we go in there and listen to something real quick?
All right. So here's this is going to be something a little bit different. I want to play the end of the second track, which is Flying Lessons. Something that I lament a little bit about this record is that, you know, we play clips on this show.
Yeah, I hate that
but
too.
Well,
sorry. Yeah. Just kidding.
Kiss
love the clips.
My ass.
Yeah, go ahead.
But like, it's really hard to appreciate these songs without hearing them all the way through. But what's something I like about this record is that it kind of sounds like a mixtape of a bunch of really good bands. So the only way to like really do Flying Lesson is far and away my favorite song on this record. But the segue from the end of that to The Hour Grows Late is a just genius transition. So I actually want to do that.
So you want to play the outro of that song into the intro of the next song?
Correct.
Okay, we can do that.
Kevin's figuring it out Ryan.
We're breaking new ground.
Yeah.
Shaking it up here on
Ryan's
Somebody
driving
Likes
the
it.
Bus here.
Yeah, no, it's all good. Okay, Ryan. So
this is going to be track two and a track three, Flying Lesson, which is parenthetically titled Hot Chicken Number One, Into the Hour Grows
Of course.
Late. Yeah, as one does.
Yeah. All right, let's give the mixtape, not mixtape, a listen.
All right,
here it is. Okay, so a question for the two of you. If I were this were like the match game or whatever, and you're trying to, well, maybe not the match game.
What the
who gets
fuck
to be?
I don't even understand.
He's
what
doing
that is.
The, like kind of the wah wah pedal, I think, in the old match.
The match game had oddly similar music to it as 70s porn.
Oh,
and yeah. It was from the era.
I don't know that I'm familiar with that.
Oh, that was the one where they, and actually it's the wrong game show for this bit, but like it was the one where, you know, he didn't, you know, when he died, they didn't put him in a coffin, they put him in a blank.
In a what?
Family Feud?
No, it was the old
look up celebrity panel show where they'd come up with like a ridiculous question and then they'd say they put him in a what? And then like Betty White would go like, you know, hold up some ridiculous card and
So it was Squares?
It was very much a Hollywood Squares type vibe. But it was a different show, and it featured Gene Rayburn, who had really crazy, tall, skinny microphone.
Yeah, it was like really long and had like a little tiny tip to it.
Yeah.
Like, what's his nuts used to have on the Newlywed Game? Oh, no. I'm thinking Family Feud, like Richard Dawson had on the Family Feud.
Yeah. Anyway.
No. Bob Barker on The Price is Right. Any some fucking game.
So now I've strayed. But so I originally was going to do a little bit about something that I read, and we'll get to that. But it doesn't really work with the match game thing, so I'll just throw it to you guys this way. If you were going to – there's someone on the internet who refers to himself – on his website as the Dean of American Rock Criticism. Who do you think that might be?
Man.
Lester Bangs?
Well, no. When he died before the internet. So
Bangs.
So,
yeah, that's
unless, you know, from the great beyond, in which case we ought to be talking about that shit because that's amazing.
The Dean of American Rock Criticism?
Yeah. Who would have the cojones to call himself that?
Robert Christgau?
Yep.
Are you fucking serious?
And of course, he is...
Come on down and get your prize.
He is a fawning teenager when it comes to Yo La Tengo. And let me just share with you what he had to say briefly about Electro Puro. He says, Alterna Puro would be more like it, brimful of punk, fuzz, feedback noise, and the lovingly amped squelches of fingers sliding off strings. Their seventh album is a substantial... tour de force, like check on the list, luxuriating so sybaritically.
I actually read this. Sybaritically?
Sybaritically? There we go. My eyes are going.
My eyes are rolling.
Yeah, well, there you go. As they should. And guitar sound that I'm reluctant to mention that the tunes are also pretty good. I believe you have. That's why...
He's reluctant to mention.
It's getting Kevin's ire up here a little
bit. Well, you know, these guys are... And don't get me wrong, like, it's not an easy gig, but we know at least one semi-humble rock critic, and I just don't... I don't even think
he's semi-humble. He's just a regular dude.
Yeah, he is a regular dude.
Yeah.
Anyway, and he'll join us one of these days. But anyway, he says, singing's breathy as usual, with Ira yelling when the time is right. As for the lyrics, you know, murmured, gnomic, pop culture references, that kind of thing. That's the whole review. Yeah. So, anyway.
And Kevin, you actually also reminded me, we also know one not at all humble rock critic.
Oh, I know. Well, and I sort of compare and contrast the two of them in my head sometimes. Yeah. And that's a story for another day. We won't name check that, but...
Yeah. Anyhow.
But anyway, so yes, the Dean of American Rock Critics officially loves this record and deems it the best in their catalog.
I feel redeemed.
I figured you might.
Yeah, I thought I just liked it because it was good.
Mm-hmm.
But apparently it's... Is it Christgau or Christgau?
I think it's Christgau. Yeah. But, you know, whatever. Credit where credit's due, all right? I came up with that shit.
Well, actually, I think Christgau might be.
I think Christ figure.
Can I just say something about that review real quick?
Sure.
It's a decent description of the album that makes sense if you've heard the album.
Sure.
But it says absolutely fucking nothing if you've never heard
it. Oh, if you're like looking at, you know, going like, oh, what should I buy? What the fuck does that mean?
Yeah, I mean, like after you've listened to it, you can read that and you're like, oh, okay, that makes sense. But if you've never fucking heard it before, that it's you might as well be speaking dog.
Right. Well, and he throws away all these, the murmured gnomic pop culture references, that kind of thing. It's just
that kind of thing that we talk about all the time.
Of course.
Murmured gnomic references.
You and I, Robert. Thank you. Thank you. But I do think that those guys, and this happens with a lot of rock criticism, I think these guys end up inside their own head so much sometimes that they're not relatable. And it's also like he writes well, but he also writes like
a lot of these guys
he's not gonna let you in on the joke.
A lot of these guys write reviews to impress other critics.
It would seem so.
Yeah. I'm only going to throw this in here because it sort of you know how much I don't want to talk about the fact that I play music, but I don't like to talk about it on the air. It's just
he plays the recorder.
True. Oh. So
we're
record that came out about 10 years ago, and a cat that used to write for the Austin Chronicle here in town, and now he writes for the Weekly in Houston. Chris Gray hung out at my Weekly residency at Egos. I had a weekly residency at this dive bar in Austin for 7 years. on Wednesday nights, and he hung out there that night, went home with Bill Davis, who is notorious in my friend group. I'm sure we've mentioned him before. And he will definitely be on the show at some point.
And Bill Davis is an American artist. Would you?
He is an American artist slash train wreck.
Yeah. Also train wreck.
But an amazing human being. Great songwriter and
whip smart.
Incredibly brilliant.
Yeah.
So he and Chris Gray went home together. Not that kind of go home, and did cocaine together till the sun came up, and then. Bill somehow got him to work at the Austin Chronicle, whereupon he walked inside, wrote the review of my album, it was in that day's Chronicle or the next day's Chronicle. Reading it, it says literally nothing that makes any sense about any kind of thing that was on the record, but it's one of those things where it's a lot of obtuse language similar to...
I've found a lot of local reviews tend to be that way. They're just like 3 stars is the de facto review rating, and they tend to like just say a lot of like kind of pretty nice platitudes and not really much.
They don't want to piss anybody off, number one. And Chris was a super nice guy. One more little addendum to that story. He somebody told me, I knew it's another writer that worked there at the time, and they told me that they found him in the copy. In the room where like there's a Xerox machine, and he was like on the floor asleep, like trying to hide behind a copy machine.
Oh my God.
Anyway, sorry. Yeah. I just had to.
Well, and I didn't mean to sidebar us, but I did think it's sort of something that we've never really talked about specifically with
rock criticism.
Not in any great detail.
No,
like, certainly not this way. And I feel like with a band that kind of. Like, gets a check mark across the board from a lot of rock critics.
Well, he was a fucking rock critic.
He was a rock critic.
Yeah, right. Before
his career as a rock musician.
And that's
a
story we haven't told yet. So, yeah. Brad?
I mean, you know, I'm a little bit short on details, but I want to say it was like Village Voice or something. Ira Kaplan, the primary songwriter, so we should actually go into this a little bit. The band consists of Ira Kaplan, his wife, Georgia Hubley, who is the drummer in the band, and they added in 1992, after being around for probably 6 or 7 years, a bass player slash keyboardist named James McNew. So it's a husband and wife team and one other dude. Ira started out as a rock critic and, you know, was a very introspective sort of cerebral dude. I also noticed that I found in, you know, 3 or 4 pages of going through Google an interview where he clearly thought the interviewer was just kind of being a dick. He was like, it sounds like you just read the bio. I mean, he didn't say it exactly, but he was like, yeah, I get really bored of questions where it sounds like they just read the bio. And so anyway, he kind of knows it from both sides of the equation.
Which is interesting and fun.
I used to, years ago, in a former professional life, when I would post events online, I used to love to find bands that had the most terrible bio in the world, because there are a lot more of those than there are really good ones.
Mm-hmm.
And it usually corresponds to like sort of the whatever. If you're going to ask me, please to quit.
Yeah. Oh. Like, you step to me with your bullshit, yeah. I'm going to have to ask you please to quit.
Oh, yeah. Speaking of, we talked about this a little bit.
Weird sidebar.
I did buy, pardon me, guys, I did buy an album, a CD from a dude in the Walgreens parking lot a couple weeks ago.
You told me about this.
Yeah, and I haven't listened to it yet.
Was it Walgreens related?
No, it's rap.
Oh, all right.
In some variety.
Rap-ish?
Pretty sure. He told me it was rap. So, anyway, I bought it for $5 in the Walgreens parking lot, and I might want to review that at some point coming
all right,
up.
Yeah.
We haven't done anything local, and I think, why not start there?
Oh,
I
sure. Mean, and if you think about it, we could corner the Walgreens parking lot market. Yeah, sure. Solid. I do feel like... And this is partially my fault. I've led us astray a little bit, and we haven't talked as much directly about the record. So I think we ought to get back to the item.
Well, Kevin, you haven't really told us your thoughts.
So here are my thoughts in general on Yo La Tengo. I don't love them like you love them. I like them. I enjoy.
I don't
this
love
record.
All their stuff. Like there's like they have a giant catalog. I just happen to love this record a ton.
Yeah. Well, and I do think it's one of these deals too, where like when you're positive, and this was the case with me last week with the Air Miami record, like when you're positively imprinted at a time when you can really soak something up and like dive into the deep end on it, then you have an opportunity to really fall in love with that record, and it just stays with you. And so,
well, I had nothing else going on but driving around Northern Indiana.
Yeah.
And surprise, surprise, radio in Northern Indiana. Not really that great. Not that great.
Yeah. The Fort Wayne Morning Zoo not doing it for you.
Clear in the Beaver. Wow.
Hey, y'all. Hey, guys.
What was it?
Snap into Slim Jim.
Was it the Booger and the Badger? That's the one that you threw out.
It's the Booger and the Badger.
It's like, which is which, and I don't want to know. But
here's another Meatloaf song.
Anyway.
Blinded by the light. Wait, that's not Meatloaf, but it fits in that format.
Same difference.
It would fit.
Anyway, so to answer your question directly, I enjoyed it. I think that, you know, this is another one of those deals where I sort of have to consciously turn off my aversion to like following the herd.
I don't know which herd you're talking about.
I'm confused by that statement.
Oh, of course you are. Because
that was a little confrontational.
I'm sorry. I don't mean it to be.
You want to step inside
my garage? Here's how I mean it. It's so this band, I think, to a certain, and this has probably not as much to do with the songs themselves, but like they check all the cool boxes, and so it's one of these deals where like
I get year, that.
Years ago, I bought because it was funny. I bought the Hipster Handbook, and I brought it home, and like we start reading it to Ryan, and Ryan's like, "We're like, wow, Ryan, this kind of sounds like you," and he's like, "I'm not really much of a follower." So
just being ironic.
So yeah. So I felt like there are those things that are outside the actual songs themselves that that I have to overcome to get into a record like this. That anyway. That said, I did enjoy it, and I thought actually, here's what I think. I think that for me, it's a record that I have to roll around in a little while to get to know.
It's definitely a repeated listening kind of deal. Like it's not the kind of thing that you listen to once and you're just like,
here are
all the hits.
I like it better than the record that I'm about to mention, but there's no mistaking this for Janet Jackson's Control.
It's nearly that good.
Yeah. Anyway.
No, I'm sorry.
Anyway, but yeah, no, you ask, and so that's my answer, is that I do like it, and I still feel like I'm getting to know it. Like it doesn't,
and it's one of those things that, like, you know, probably the way you feel about Air Miami, like, you know, you just kind of know. To me, it's like putting on like a, you know, great shirt that I've had for 15 years that it still feels great.
I'm glad the way that you said that, because this is my I'm just going to insert myself into the dialogue here. I feel like...
Did you raise your hand?
Might as well, motherfucker.
I'm sorry, we're monopolizing. Go ahead.
No, I didn't mean it like that. I find Yola Tengo to be a model of consistency for both good and bad.
Sure.
It's amazing to me that this is their seventh record. I had no idea until you said that. I knew that they were around at least since the early 90s, but I had no idea that they put out that many records before this. I am not as big of a fan of this album as I am the two subsequent ones. I don't think the writing is quite as strong, but I like it more than you do, Kevin. I think it's really interesting. It sort of sets the template for what they were going to get, what they did for about the next 15 years.
One thing that I read... and I don't remember whether it was, I guess it wasn't this Chris Gow, it may have been one of the other pieces that I pulled down, but they talked about this sort of three-album arc, with this one being...
Painful, Electro Pura, and I Can Hear the Heart Beating as Well.
Right, and you bought me the the next record.
I Can Hear the Heart Beating
yeah,
as Well.
Which I own, and that's you one I actually know pretty well. So, anyway, yeah.
Well, there are a lot of, lists out there, and... there are a lot of big fans of Yo La Tengo, and they all seem to think I Can Hear the Heart Beating as One is their best record.
I think so.
I don't.
I know. We've had this discussion before.
But I do need to go out and buy Painful now, which I've
never actually really listened to Painful. And
if it's half as good as this, like, I'll plunk down $15. And that's right, kids, for an actual CD.
Mm-hmm. Impressive. Hey, well, why don't we go back and listen to one of these songs? Well, you have a I'm looking at your fucking list here, and you have
What I'd like to do is Paul is Dead.
I want to play the last fourth of this song, but not the last 5 seconds.
Yeah, and then I want you to switch to song seven. No, this one I just want to straight up play the first 45 seconds or so, because I think Ira paints a really amazing portrait of what's going on in his head. To the point where I actually was able to figure out what song he's talking about, walking behind a guy who has headphones on, listening to a Stones song, and I was able to figure out what the Stones song was.
You're very proud of yourself.
Yes, Shane, I am very proud of myself.
But I would be too.
But to your point, we go down the deep end on some of these, when you get to know them that way.
Yeah, well, no, and granted, I've heard it 100 times at least. But anyway, why don't you play a little bit of Paul's
Dead? I want to comment real quick. I love it how normally we have 25-30 second excerpts. Ryan's I want you to just go ahead and play the first 2.15 seconds of the song. You know, that's how much you love this fucking album.
No, I've been I have no idea what to play. I'm gonna need help with you guys. And I've got stuff crossed out. You know, from today.
It's a death duel. It could be song 5 or it could be song 7. We'll just let them fight it out. We'll see who takes it.
No, I've literally been going normally I'm okay, yeah, well, these 3 or 4 songs are the best on this. And I'm just no, the whole thing's fucking genius.
All right, play the song. Paul is Dead.
All right.
That was Paul is Dead, which I think is – well, we'll talk about this in a second because I really like – that's probably my favorite song on this record. It showcases everything that they do – the stuff that I feel they do the best. But real quick, before we talk about Paul is Dead, I want to talk about the elephant in the room here, Kevin.
Sure, or the lack of one.
Yeah, so you guys may notice that the reason that Ryan has shut the fuck up about this goddamn record is that he's no longer here. During the break, he took it upon himself to go pick up his laundry from the wash and fold down the street. And why he had to go in the middle of the show, we're unclear. He didn't tell us before.
No, he had a folded laundry emergency, which is
awesome considering that they weren't closing for many more minutes.
Yeah. Anyway, you never realize what it's like to have wrinkled clothes, the problems that they can cause in your life until you reach the point of no return.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I get it. He was very adamant that that had to happen right then, and God bless him, you know, he wasn't going to get up tomorrow in the morning.
So can we talk while he's not here? Can we talk a little bit about Ryan's adoration?
His enthusiasm for this album?
If he could bronze this album and still listen to it, if it'd still work, you know, then he would do that.
Yeah, definitely. I've known Ryan you've known him longer than I have, clearly.
You've known him as an adult, about almost as long as I have.
I've rarely seen him as enthusiastic about something as this. I mean, when he picked it told us last week what we were listening to, I knew he was into it, but man, he is into it.
Yeah, no, it's great. And you know, it's one of these deals too, where I do think I have found myself thinking a lot about how we're imprinted by the things that we connect with.
Right, of course, and he's fully saying the same thing. I mean, so this is what, before we went into this last break, I was I was talking about how my the records I like the most by these guys are the next one. I Can Hear the Heart Beating is one, and then The Thing Turned Itself Inside Out. In fact, I think that the catchiest, poppiest single on And Then The Thing Turned Itself Inside Out, You Can Have It All, which is a cover, but it does a lot of the same stuff as Paul Is Dead on this record, where they're using vocal loops as a big instrument, as the main focus.
It's very Yola Tengo.
It's very Yola Tengo, but yeah. It's what they do really well. I mean, it's eminently listenable.
Yeah, and I think it's fair to say that in general, this band I think this is one of the things that I kind of struggle with. They sound aloof and warm at the same time.
It's what I was saying earlier. Like, they're the model of consistency. They've never put out a bad record that I've heard, but they've never put out a straight up home run record at the same time. There are home run moments. I mean, they're. I could listen to them as background music all day long.
I do have to say that I am a little bit sad that we're not covering I Am Not Afraid of You and I Will Beat Your Ass.
They have good song. What was the other one? It's like Flying Lessons, something Chicken Number One.
Hot Chicken Number One?
Yes, yeah. Good song titles.
Yeah, and well, unfortunately, there is a Hot Chicken Number Two, so...
Oh, there is?
Yeah, it's later on in the record.
Well, why is that unfortunate?
Well, no, I said fortunately.
Oh, I thought you said unfortunately. Well, it takes some of shine off of Hot Chicken Number
One. Stealing the thunder of Hot Chicken Number One. No, yeah, so at the very least, they're into completing the end joke, so we appreciate that. All right, so we've riffed on Ryan a little bit while he's gone. I do want to get his feedback on...
We really shouldn't.
Paul Is Dead.
Yeah, we shouldn't take up too much of the show without him in it, because I could see him. What was it? About somebody's ass is going to get beat.
Oh yeah, I'm not afraid of you, and I will beat your ass.
Yeah, I think that's if we keep going and on the show for a little while, that's probably what's going to come.
It could
out
be
of
the
his
actual
mouth.
Sound of what you hear next. All right, so we're gonna step away for a minute. We will mark the passage of time.
Oh, by the way, and he said, it's less than 5 minutes, and we've been talking for over 5 minutes, so...
Yeah, no, it's leisurely. He's taking a leisurely stroll down to the shirt-folding place, and and which is, I guess, a variety
I'm
of...
I'm about to eat all his goddamn sweet tarts, I'll tell you that
That's
much.
What you get, man. But we'll be back in just a few with Ryan's take on Paul Is Dead. Cheers. So, Ryan, while you're gone, Shane and I talked about Paul Is Dead for a little while.
Yeah, Ryan's back.
We just pretty much covered the rest of the album. So
I had to pick up my laundry.
That's like...
Yeah, they know all about that.
Yeah, and we talked a little bit about that, and we were talking about how we were hoping that you'd come back with creases. And
you're just wearing the same shirt you had on earlier.
Yeah, you look exactly as rumpled as when you left here.
It's very disappointing.
Well, I was going for a rumpled look, so
yeah, exactly.
Success.
So anyway, but we did want to, in all seriousness, we did talk a little bit, but we wanted to circle back and give you an opportunity to give your two cents on Paul Is Dead, one of your favorite songs on this record.
Well, I mean, it's among all of my favorite songs on this record, which is the whole record except for one, but I just like how Ira, like, paints this portrait. Like, I feel like, you know, I'm kind of in his head. Like, he's, you know, happens to be, like, walking behind this guy. This dude's got, you know, sign of the times, a Walkman with headphones on. And, you know, you've got George's sort of haunting, you know, voice coming up behind him. And James McNew playing keyboards. And, like, the whole thing just sort of paints a portrait for me.
How come there aren't any songs about Zune players?
Oh my god, no shit, man.
Like, there's nobody like walking behind a guy with like an off-brand MP3.
There's probably a website somewhere devoted to like the love of the Zune.
Maybe, yeah, probably.
You know what, it's a good rhyme. It would be an easy rhyme.
It would be.
Can I just say, like, we definitely had a
Tins on zines, utes.
Hey, little leets. We had a much more streamlined meat, like raw meat show when Ryan was gone.
Yeah, no, it's true. There was less meandering on that segment, mostly because, well, you know, frankly, Ryan's impromptu road trip makes for some pretty interesting fodder, but also because Shane and I aren't bogged down, and I use that in finger quotes. Like,
no, it's okay.
We're not encumbered by 20 years of history with this record the way that
you are. Yeah, the fine print.
Well, and I did think about it a little bit on my sojourn, if you will, that it's kind of like going, here's my baby. What do you think? You know, like, and I didn't make the record or anything, but, like, I just fucking love it. Like, it's my own child. Like, I just...
No, I get what you're
like,
saying.
Like, tell me what you think of this baby. Well, they're not going to love it as much as you do.
Yeah. Well, has it shit on you yet?
This record has never shit on me, except for track number 13, which is a giant art turd in the middle of this record.
We're about to go to our intermission a few minutes with, but I wanted to bring something up real quick, and that this is something Kevin and I were talking about when you went to pick up your fucking laundry.
And that's actually how they had it tagged on the receipt.
Ryan's fucking laundry.
They're like, here, take this.
I don't know why
can
they
you get
like
this
that.
Out so you can go back and do your show?
Right.
So Paul is dead. One of the things that I like about this song, and I was saying it reminds me, they're using vocal loops as one of the main instruments in it, and a lot of the same way as you can have it all on, and then nothing turns itself inside out, and it's very Yola Tango and very innovative and very cool, and in my opinion, and is that something that stands out to you when you listen to the song?
I mean,
it immediately stands out to me.
You're talking about the. Like the Georgia Hubley.
Ooh. Right. Yeah.
I mean, I didn't necessarily think about the craft of it so much, just like sort of the, like how the whole, like kind of hangs together like so well. I think this is a very well composed, well arranged song.
Well, that's part of the arrangement is that vocal loop that's like the incredibly large part of the song.
Well, yeah. And as a musician, you're probably going to notice that more than me as someone who's more of a consumer of music and may have dabbled in the business a little bit, but like I don't necessarily break down a song into its component parts unless I'm working with a band at the time, you know, and seeing the thing in its fledgling form.
But I will say to Shane's point, like those vocal loops are a very distinct characteristic that I think Yola Tango employs. They don't employ it too much maybe, but when it pops up, it doesn't surprise you. It definitely
sounds like it's in their
wheelhouse.
Yeah, and something I read in, you know, like going back and reading about this record is they sort of write in an opposite way of most bands, where most bands, somebody will come in with an idea, they've got a little, you know, like a hook that they've come up with or a few lines. They jam together and then boil it down into its
essence. Kind
pretty much. Like, yeah. You know, they find the heart of, like, what they were screwing around with and then try to, like, refine that.
Maybe that speaks to the consistency in the sound, too.
Sure. Yeah, you would think so.
Yeah. If it's completely a collaborative effort. On that note...
Yeah, we have to get to a few minutes.
It's a few minutes with, and Kevin's got the pick this week, so yeah. Why don't we go ahead and do our intermission?
Can you find us like a really great pop song from the 80s that's also sort of racist?
Can I?
Oh, all right, let's do it.
Everybody, hold tight.
The Booger and the Badger.
All right, here we go. So today we're going to cover a song that that if you've heard once, you probably wouldn't have forgotten it. Not only because it was at one point way back in the day a popular track, but also one of these, you know, it's from a band that kind of goes down as a one-hit wonder act. And I'm talking about "Turning Japanese" by the Vapors.
Yeah, that song is has a way of etching itself onto one's cranial hard drive and never leaving.
Yeah. It's an earworm.
Partially, it's a perfect pop song, and also kind of racist.
I think kind of is giving it credit. Well, it's not just the race. It gets even more. We just watched the video for it, and I mean, not only does it throw in like
that, and it's the original video. I remember that.
Yeah, the guy's like waving around like samurai swords, and there's like some sort of geisha playing a gong and shit.
Yeah,
it's pretty great.
It kind of looks like the video looks like it was. If you haven't seen it, go watch it. It kind of looks like it was shot in an abandoned sushi restaurant, like, and there are just weird little like affectations that happen throughout it. Like,
well, and so the urban legend about this song is really about its what it's about,
right? Which the band,
which is the truly racist. Part, but the band vehemently denies.
No. I don't know. Are we talking about the same thing?
Yeah, I think you are.
Masturbation.
Yes, and the band vehemently. In fact, I saw an interview with the singer a few years ago at Y. I don't know. And he was saying that it definitely was not about that. But when they got to America on their first American tour,
are they British?
Yeah,
they're British. They originally spelled it, the Vapors was really spelled with a U, and then they took that out so they could, you know, be American and shit.
Like, cross the pond.
You're not fooling anybody. We know where you're from. The Beatles were still popular here. It's okay.
Well, so he was saying that on their first American tour, maybe only, I don't know, but they had never, apparently that rumor had just spread all over the country.
So this is like a Rod Stewart's stomach pump semen story.
Yeah, sort of. I don't think it's quite as graphic as that, but
I've heard that for 20 years.
He said that essentially, and I'm of course paraphrasing, but he was saying that definitely was not about masturbation, which, by the way, I get the reference that, you know, whatever, like if he were to say that, I'd be like, oh, okay, I understand what you're talking about. But he said, yeah, they had never heard that before they got to the States, but every single date on the tour, people would bring it up to them. So apparently it was like just widespread.
Well, if you break down the lyrics, you could kind of see it.
You have to remember, too, that this came out, this is pre-internet. And so it came out during a time when stuff like that would get passed around from rock fan to rock fan and whatever. And so I think there's a lot of games.
That's
how I was thinking. But honestly, like, my take on this whole thing is, like, I think he's full of shit. I think it's completely about masturbation, personally.
If you break it down, it seems like it. I mean, I went into it thinking
Your picture?
Yeah, I've got your picture. I want a doctor to take your picture so I can look at you from inside as well. And then
maybe he's just concerned about her health.
I'm certain that that's the case, Kevin. Like,
Such faith in humanity.
Most perfect power pop songs are about, health of a
fellow human
being.
Just making sure you're okay. That was the working title.
Just making sure. Just checking up on you.
One interesting thing that I don't know if you guys read about this band, but they were managed by Paul Weller's dad.
That's weird.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
Did Paul Weller's dad even manage Paul Weller?
I don't know. It didn't say that. But I was like, that is curious. That is curious information. So, and then the other thing that I thought was really cool or fascinating about this, and I have nothing else other than, well, I mean, I have other things, but I have nothing else on this particular bit other than to say that this song, that song was produced by a guy named Vic Coppersmith Heaven.
I have no idea what to do with that.
Why is that guy not? Why was he never in a band with Ronnie James Dio?
It's like so, and it's a hyphen too, which leads me to believe that like that's what his parents
Coppersmith. Are you married Heaven?
Are you going to the Coppersmith Heaven wedding? I was like, no, but I'm going now. Like, that's amazing.
That's one of the best things that's ever existed.
Yeah. So,
his first name is Vic. Hey, forget about it. Hey,
Coppersmith. Yeah, Heaven.
It's just weird.
Upon also, Thames.
and this told me a little bit about this song in particular too, and the power of like the American record buying public. This band has put out four greatest hits records.
You gotta be fucking kidding me.
I swear to
God. Are you sure they're not four greatest hit singles?
Well, no, it's like the old bit that I used to tell you, like,
I have all your album.
Yeah.
They
have four, and
I thought, honestly, when you were ramping that up, I thought you were gonna say four albums.
Yeah. No, they have two albums, and they have four greatest hits.
Can I just say this real quick? There is a best of Free album. Guess what it's called?
Free?
No, it's called The Best of Free, All Right Now.
That's a song we should pick for one of these segments.
They had a Best of the Vapors. I don't have them all, but then they had another one called Turning Japanese, The Best of the Vapors. And another one called...
And so it's a single, right?
Yeah, anyway, I thought these guys were cool when I was young
Didn't you buy this? Like the record?
Oh, yeah. And in fact, this dates me a little bit, but whatever. We've talked about the fact that I'm old. And
you are old.
Sorry, if I could hear you, I would be really
so
upset.
So old.
Anyway, but this was one of those deals, like, when this song came out was right around the time that I was getting out of high school, and they would do one of those things where they would you would submit a song that was supposed to be your class song or whatever.
I actually remember what you guys' class song was.
Right.
I think you guys have had this discussion before, but I don't
know. Well, we probably have. But anyway, the class song, it was some Cars track.
It was Let the Good Times Roll.
Yeah, Let the Good Times Roll, which I feel like for probably 2 or 3 years was probably that school's song every year. Yeah.
Oh, my God.
But
perfect class song.
I submitted Turning Japanese as...
That would be a really weird class song.
Well, I was like, they make watches and
the whole
Walkman and the other accoutrements of the
Cars.
Day. Yeah.
Bringing it all back.
The best part of that song, before we get out of this... is the call and response guitar line in the chorus?
Sure.
It's one of the coolest. I love the way it sounds. It's just a really cool melody line. And Liz Phair covered this song.
I've never heard that. I would be really interested to hear that.
Yeah, yeah, me too. Well, this is my point. She covered it in the mid-90s for some shit. I don't remember. And
Tolerance Rally.
Probably, yeah. and it doesn't have that guitar line in it. And
you can't. How can you do this?
I know,
without that
it's
guitar
so
line.
Disappointing. Yeah. To not. It's really you feel really unfulfilled.
You just feel like the guys in that band would be knocking on your dressing room, going, "Hey, that's all of it. That's the whole song.
That's the hook.
Yeah, that's the thing that you need to put in there. The rest of it, you can fuck with, but don't do that."
I swear to God, I remember listening to it many, many times. It would come on the radio, and I'd be like, get excited at first, and then it was, and I knew it was going to be just a total
the sad trombone version.
I did listen to this with a buddy of mine from work, who you took home.
I'm just guessing.
He doesn't have a car. He does have great taste in music, and he immediately was like, "Oh yeah, I love this song." So one of these other podcasts will have to do the song I played after it, which is also vaguely racist, which he hadn't heard, which is Walla Voodoo's Mexican Radio.
Yeah. You're just doing it's like the trip around the world of racist singles.
Yeah.
Well,
vaguely
well,
racist.
I don't want to do an illegal alien.
This one, by the way, is not vaguely racist. It's pretty goddamn full bore racist.
Well, at any rate, these guys have been milking that one song for 20, 25 years.
God bless them.
Yeah, it's crazy. But yeah, thanks for letting me spin it. That was a lot of fun. Let's get back out of this and get back into Yellow
Tango.
Yeah. All right. Coming up next.
To take a picture, so I can look at you from inside as well. He gets me turning up and turning down, I'm turning in, I'm turning right, I'm turning Japanese. I think I'm turning Japanese, I really think so. Turning Japanese, I think I'm turning Japanese, I really think so. Turning Japanese, I think I'm turning Japanese, I really think so. Turning Japanese, I think I'm turning Japanese, I really think so.
So that was Turning Japanese, and one thing that I forgot to mention that I have thought about a lot since I picked that record to do our little sort of intermission segment was that there used to be a stand-up comedian who back during the 80s when this song broke used to do a bit about turning Japanese. And they, do you remember, Ryan?
Like, well, I remember a bit. I don't know if it's the same one.
And well, I don't know how many there could be. But basically, the gist of it was, and this is sort of in this very, very big, like, 80s windup. He was like, if you were turning Japanese, you would know. Like, that was the...
Yeah, you
like, that I really think so?
He's like... You think so? He's like, yeah, you would know. You would be pretty sure.
That would be a thing that's like, okay, this is definitely happening.
It's sort of what was the there was a movie in the I just poked the shit out of my eye. It hurts really bad. How did I do that? I don't know.
Don't do that.
Well, quit putting the microphone in your face.
It wasn't the microphone. It was my finger, moron.
I'm the moron.
Now we're all turning.
Okay,
on each
I'm just trying. I'm just trying to turn it back on you.
Anyway, you're saying
what was that album in the 80s where the guy like paints himself black in order to like get? You guys are giving me quizzical looks.
Whoa, Electric Youth by Debbie Gibson.
That would be amazing if it were, but no. He like to, in order to get
the jazz
like,
singer
get,
by Al Jolson.
Like he like takes advantage.
That was not the 80s, Kevin.
Oh, I'm sorry. That was
he,
the 20s.
He like takes 30s, advantage whatever. Of affirmative action by painting himself black and like goes to college and stuff like that. It's called like
oh, a movie.
Soul
you
Man.
Said an album.
Was it Soul
oh,
Man?
Yeah, so it was Soul Man. Man. Sorry, I meant movie. I'm sorry. Did I say
sad
album?
To say yeah. I have that. Yes.
Okay. So yeah, something like that. Like if you were to get if you start turning Japanese, look at him. You know. It would,
yeah.
Yeah.
You'd obviously. Probably have an idea.
That is, by the way, and we've talked about this before, and we're going to do this at some point. We're all going to pick a movie and review it.
Oh, sure.
And just, I'm putting a mental check mark that I'm going to make everybody here watch Soul Man. That's going to be the one I'm probably going to pick.
Right.
So,
like I said before we
I've never seen it, but we're since we're continuing down the vaguely racist.
Well, I just want to watch everything in the C. Thomas Howell canon and just do a podcast about that.
I love that you remember that his name is C. Thomas, and you're correct. But let's get back. We're coming to the end here.
Yeah, we want to circle back to the record, and so Ryan, let's talk a little bit more about Yellow Tango.
Well, it's like the greatest band ever and stuff.
Yeah, can you tell?
and like, this, like
well, and the best part is that like 2 minutes and 11 seconds.
it's like you know pure bliss. So if you guys don't understand it, I don't understand you.
So with regard to
could you go 24 hours in that vocal inflection?
In that voice?
Can you do that? I swear to God,
how much money is there?
I will pay $50 if you will do that.
Oh, it's gonna take.
But
more
no,
than
but
that.
Then I have to walk. Oh, well, yeah. I was gonna say I have to be with you to make sure to document.
Nobody
it.
It's
wants
the
that.
Monitoring that really makes jury duty feel like a day off.
Yeah, because trust me, I know your fucking brother, and the second I got out of earshot, he'd be like, "Take my $50."
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, so no, to be honest, like, obviously, like, I feel like this record can do no wrong, except for track number 13. But beyond that...
Why don't you play something on track 13? It's like this anomalous...
Well, okay, I want to do two things. I want to play a little bit of Pablo and Andrea, which you agree with me is an amazing song.
It is an amazing
song. And it's a tragedy, a crime against humanity that we can't play the whole song on our format.
I'm not sure it rises to that level.
It's right? Not even hyperbole.
Pretty
exclamation point and
square
italics.
Yeah,
in bold.
Yeah, man. I have nothing bad to say about this, so it makes for bad podcast.
I don't think it does. But you and I have talked about this off the air, and I'll hand the conversation back over to you. But one thing that I did want to make sure that we said in this.
He keeps gesturing towards my sweet tarts. So.
No, I'm the one that's eating your sweet tarts.
In this segment, I wanted to make sure that we got in, and we've alluded to it, but there's no way we're going to be able to get to all the songs that you really appreciate on this record.
Which is every one of them except for track number 13.
I know.
Attack
I know.
On Love.
Yeah, the Albatross.
Which I think we probably should play a little just because it's such an outlier.
Because you won't shut the hell up about it.
Well, it's the giant art turd in the middle of the record.
All right, so we can.
Anyway, I do no. I would much rather play something that I truly love and that I know Shane likes a lot. I don't know what you feel about it.
No, I dig it. I do dig
it. Yeah, you know, and it is a record that rewards repeated listenings. And
is that Pablo and Andrea?
Pablo and Andrea is, you know, the track that I would like to listen to next. Like, the whole record.
Why don't we do, like, back-to-back? Why don't you play, like, a clip of Pablo and Andrea and then play
Then let's back it up against Attack on
just,
Love.
Just, like, direct, like...
contrast.
So you can show the... Right, exactly. So you can show the contrast.
Okay. We'll
let's
do it.
Let's do that.
All right. So we're gonna we're starting with the good and going to the other side.
Kids, that was Pablo and Andrea, a brilliant song, backed up against a not brilliant song, Attack on Love, which, as far as I can see, is a giant piece of shit in an otherwise beautiful record.
Which is what I want to name my next dog.
Giant piece of
giant
shit
piece
on
of
another
shit
otherwise
beautiful,
beautiful record.
Yeah. Come on, boy.
It takes you like longer to call him back to you than it does for him just to turn around and come back on his own. Yeah, no, I thought...
Mere giant piece of shit on an otherwise beautiful record. Dinner time.
Yeah. I will say this about Attack on Love. I mean, it sounds like an attack on something.
It's like an attack on...
your ears.
Yes. Like, it's cacophonous... awful noise.
But I do think that it is interesting that, like, that's what it takes to make you hate something on this record. It's like an intentional effort.
Yeah. I was thinking the same. I was thinking the same thing. Like, he gets equally worked up positively or negatively. Yeah. I mean, he's very, like, visibly, I can, like, he's really excited one way or the other.
Well, and what's weird is, like, going back and reading reviews of this record, like, they're all positive. None of them managed to bring up that there's a big, giant turd in the middle of it. Like,
yeah.
Like, it's and I don't know how you don't notice.
Like Mike Sherrill used to say, that's what the skip button's for. I don't...
Well, and that's
so
why I was always calling it track number 13. I didn't even know the name of it until this week, because I always just listen to this on CD, and I'm like, oh, it's track number 13. Next. Like, there's no redeeming quality to that. I mean, other than, like, I mean, maybe if it's, like, a stunt as, like, an art...
It's gotta be amusing somebody somewhere.
Well,
it's
probably the band.
Well,
like,
especially if we talked about their method of composing, and their method of composing is just to jam and fuck around until they feel like they have they mine the nugget of a song and they reduce. Well, it.
No, that's a sound collage, man. I mean, that was put together.
Honestly,
well, that's what I mean. Though. Like,
here's what I
want to
think about it:
from,
is like. That it's performance art.
Look how excited he is about it. It's really funny. Yeah.
Well, it's okay.
He's so
it's
worked
such
out.
A genius record, and then there's this in the middle of it that I gotta think there's an element of like performance art to it, which makes me think of a joke. Have I told you guys this? How many performance artists does it take to change a light bulb?
I think you've told me, but I don't remember.
Three. Two to hold the giraffe while the other throws multicolored power tools in the bathtub.
Yeah, I do. I have heard that.
Like, no,
thank
it's just fucking like
it's
ridiculous fucking left turn from the rest of the record.
Point taken. The only thing that annoys me with stuff like that, and you see it all over the place, is that yeah, up till that, it's a really solid, even keeled listen. And if you're trying to take a nap on the couch,
and then this happens,
yeah,
no, it's like you're being jostled awake by your fucking 4-year old nephew.
The Beatles did it. Revolution
nice
number 9.
I said nephew.
Oh wait, this is some
no. Go ahead.
Inside joke. I'm
yeah,
saying
it's just a family thing.
Look, the Beatles are the greatest pop writers in the history of pop music, in my opinion. And Revolution Number 9 is one of the most annoying songs I've ever heard of.
Ridiculously annoying.
Yeah.
So it's and this sort of takes that template.
Yeah. No, it's just like here fucking listen to this. Oh, so, I dare you.
So I did want to jump into at least one more review, and I pulled down the interesting thing is this is another one of these records that's 20 years old. So or almost and
19,
so,
but yeah.
And it's so funny. It's like it's still getting people to buy beer for it, but not much longer. And so that sort of limits the like the review scope that's out there. One of the ones we talked about the Chris Guy review. I also pulled another one from AllMusic that I thought was kind of interesting. And these are at this point I feel like they've been worn down by time, and so these are they tend to be pretty short. But there are a couple of little nuggets in here, especially with regard to some songs that we haven't gotten to that I think are also pretty interesting on this record. And one was Tom Courtenay. Which
is considered like the pop song on this record.
Yeah, which I like having heard it a few times. I was like, I kind of don't get it.
Yeah.
So, but anyway, I think that I feel like critics kind of glommed.
Isn't that
onto
the name of your in-laws though too? Sort of.
Not really.
Okay. Anyhow.
Anyway, but
diversion.
It's like, who's the drunkest?
Shane is.
Yes. Shane's doing this thing where
y'all
want
to party.
He's buried his head in
his
microphone.
Y'all ready to do it? Let's look and get it on.
It's like Hank Williams never left. But anyway.
Oh my God! Hold on.
I have to get through
okay.
This bit.
Say that and then will you remind me of Hank Williams?
Yeah.
I always do, don't I? Like, just
it's
look
the
at
beard.
Me.
So anyway, one of the things that the All Music Review mentions about Tom Courtenay is that because the song name checks the Beatles, that it somehow or another boasts a tune that the Fab Four would have been happy to come up with themselves. That's what the reviewer says. And I was like, I don't necessarily know that that's true.
Yeah,
but I feel like that's somebody who sort of either gets caught up in the romance of this record. Or like the mystique around this record, or like you, Ryan, maybe loves 13 out of the 14 tracks and then just chooses to sort of not observe the other one. And so they remember it as a happy snow globe. And then that's how these things pop up. But one thing that one last thing that I did want to share from this review, this guy closes by saying, few bands have consistently better ideas than Yellow Tango, and they make 14 of them, he says 14, work like a charm on Electro Pura. By the way, this is what I thought was interesting. By the way, those incongruous comments about the songs were lifted from an obscure book on the Blues Project, and don't trust the timings on the back cover. They're deliberately inaccurate. So... anyway, Yellow Tango's like not beyond fucking around with
people.
No,
there's a little bit of fucking around with people deliberately. He did say 14 tracks, and I take umbrage.
Yes, I figured you might. Anyway, Shane, I stepped on your bit.
No, I didn't have a bit. I just remembered I heard a Hank Williams Jr. song. For those of you that might have listened a few weeks ago, we reviewed
High Notes, Dates.
High Notes and Shit by Hank Williams Jr. And one of my big takeaways from the I know you love that. One of my big takeaways from the album was A, how fucking lazy Hank Williams Jr. is, and B, how bad the song was. But I randomly heard a Hank Williams Jr. song on the radio last night, and at first I was going to change the station, and I was like, oh wait, that's Hank Williams Jr. And I kept listening. I had never heard it before, but I walked away with my impressions of Hank Williams Jr. intact. He is totally phoning it in, totally lazy, and nothing has changed. Yeah. It wasn't just that album. I think he's got one or two good hits in there somewhere, and then and
honestly, there are four or five Hank Williams Jr. songs that I genuinely
rose colored glasses. I knew you were going to say that. I'm telling you, man. I listened to it, and no, they're not. You're misremembering.
I'm not talking about the record we talked about.
No, I'm not either. I had never heard this song before. It was lazy and phoned in.
Well, I'm not saying that song was good. I'm saying in his entire catalog of hundreds of songs.
Yeah, but that
had four
nothing
or five.
That had nothing to do with him. It had everything to do with the people that wrote those fucking songs that were.
Why are we talking about this right now?
Yeah, it's the art of the segue. And to that end, we should.
Kevin, there was one last song. I didn't want to end on the shittiest song on the record.
Yeah, no. So there were. So we mentioned Tom Courtenay, but the other song that I mentioned to Ryan when we were on the break that I actually thought was pretty interesting was False Ending. And I think it might be the kind of thing that would be fun to end with, because who knows if the ending
False
is
Ending.
Real. Yeah. This podcast might go on forever, like a baseball game that my wife can't stand.
I love how you just threw that in, like, take my wife, please, at the end of it.
Well, years ago, actually.
Kevin used to be a Borscht Belt comedian.
I know, I've been noticing this the last couple of shows that we're doing, that he throws in the word bit a lot.
Mm-hmm. It happens. Yeah, years ago, actually, Astros Braves playoffs years and years and years ago.
2005.
And so
I remember that.
And so
Shane is a giant Braves fan. Kevin is a giant Astros fan.
Neither one of us are giants.
An Astros fan. I'm not a giant Astros fan because I can't get them on my local
cable.
Would
you say that? I just imagine that we're hulking. We're huge over you.
Yeah, not actual giants. But anyway, basically, I don't know if anybody else will find this interesting. That I had promised my wife that I would take her shopping as soon as that playoff game was over,
like 18 hours.
It was like 18 innings, 18. And she was like, how long does baseball go on? Is it forever? And I was like, theoretically. So anyway, some of these songs, if you listen to bands that you're not into, or if it's track number 13 on this Yellow Tingo record, might
we
feel
know
like
who's not into
forever.
That. You don't even need to bring it up, Ryan.
Yeah. But I did want to get back to False Ending, because I thought False Ending was really interesting. It has the hallmarks, for me, of what makes great Yellow Tingo songs work.
Can I just point out that I love that we have – oh, no, there it went. We had background music for a minute.
I was going to boogie down.
It was pretty good. Somebody's car alarm was going off.
Anyhow, Kevin.
Yes.
Let's listen to False Ending.
All right. Here it is. This is False Ending. Shane, the song that I said we're going to spin was False.
You said we're going to spin False Ending, which was going to be the ending song of the podcast that we're doing right now, but that was False.
Yes,
it was false alarm.
It was False Alarm.
Right, and so I don't want anybody to be surprised or shocked or alarmed.
But what you said was false.
It was
False Alarm. Yeah. And actually, I actually had written down in my notes False Alarm, and I have 0 through 206, which is not going to happen.
No.
So funny that you do that. You're so into this album. I love it.
Dude, no, it's crazy. Like,
it really makes me.
I love this record as much as I love the White Album or The Queen Is Dead Fables of the Reconstruction. Like, no, you have no idea. Like,
we have some idea.
Okay, you might have some idea now.
We're all going to walk. I think if nothing else, if anybody that walks away from the show today, every single person, including those.
Kind of understand how much I dig this record.
Do you feel like, Ed, like none of us are fanboys, but I mean, do you feel like...
None of us are fanboys?
Not in the...
Well,
not
I'm not necessarily a Yola Tingo fanboy. I'm a fanboy of this record.
Not in the traditional sense, but what I was going to ask you, and the reason that I prefaced it with that, was do you think that you would do the Chris Farley if you sat down with Ira Kaplan.
Ooh, actually, this is a good way to introduce. I do have an anecdote about this.
Oh, okay.
So you remember when I was living in Fort Wayne and you had a music blog, and I went down to South By to like go do a couple interviews and maybe give you a little material for your nascent blog.
This is in the beginning of the internet.
Yes. What was the name of that blog?
I don't know. It was a long time ago.
Yeah, it was a while back. But anyhow, I met Ira Kaplan. So listening to this record, I thought he was going to be like some kind of combination of like Lou Reed and like James Dean. He just sounds like this like way beyond cool, like, you know, hipster, like intellectual beatnik type. And when I met him,
he was not.
I swear to God, he reminded me of nobody more than Jesus. No,
Larry David.
He's a little nebbish.
I'm so blowing this right now, but Affleck.
Oh, Gilbert Gottfried.
He reminded me of Gilbert Gottfried more than anybody else. So it was at,
when I was putting together the song.
Well, I mean,
which doesn't
really
sound like Gilbert Gottfried.
No, yeah,
like,
that was awesome / the worst.
Yeah, exactly.
So what happened is they played at Liberty Lunch, which Shane and I went to many shows at back
in the
day.
Shows at Liberty Lunch back
in
the day.
Yeah, so they were doing their South By
in on it.
They were doing their South By showcase there, and it was pretty packed. And apparently they hadn't had that many shows at that point with that many people in it. And so I went up and I was like, "Hey, like, it's really nice to meet you. Like, I'm a big fan, and you know, I really like this record." And like, there was like one other one that I'd known at the time, "May I Sing With Me," which is a good record as well. And he was like, "I'm so nervous. Like, look how many people there are here." And like, I'm probably exaggerating it a little bit, but I was expecting
I've heard the story before, and you didn't put the Gilbert Gottfried twist on it.
Yeah, but like, honestly, like, I was expecting like, "Hey, man, that's great, man. I really appreciate you like coming out."
Like, he's muted and special.
Checking out the show. And, well, his vocals on most of this are just,
with the show and the people and the...
Yeah, and, oh, man, it's... Oh, look out. No, but he literally said, "I'm so nervous. Look how many people there are out here. I hope we do well." I was not at all expecting what I got. And it doesn't in any way, shape, or form diminish, like, how much I appreciate this record. Obviously,
that actually should make you appreciate it more. I mean, it would me. I think that's incredibly endearing.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, but listening to it, you know, off in the far flung environs of bumfuck Indiana, I'm thinking like, man, this dude has it figured out, and you know, he can just lay it down. And then I meet him, and he's like, "Oh man, I'm nervous. Like, I hope I do well."
Well, I mean, so you can kind of look at that two ways, right? Like, one is that he's just being honest about sort of where he is and what he's getting ready to go through, which is like, it frankly seems hysterical now, 20 years later. Like, you're like, "Oh, but you got all this great shit in front of you, but nobody knows anything."
Well, sure. Like, I mean, to the layman, like, you see like a sea of people in front of you and like, "Oh, we've got a great crowd in front of us." Like, that seems exciting if it's not something that you're, you know, like, staking your claim on. And you know, I completely understand that now. Like, you know, you get up and, I mean, if I have to get up and give, like when I was in college, I had to get up and, like, give
Ryan,
a...
Come on, we're not going to get into that.
Anyway, I guess the other half of what I was saying is...
I didn't actually go to college.
Yes, Ryan was just born smart.
He was just going with it.
Yeah, but the other thing that could signify is that, like, none of us know until we know. Like, we kind of figure it out as we go along. And I think, you know, to their credit, that's one thing that Yolotengo has done pretty well. It's like they dive in and they have a firm footprint regardless, like, even if they're trying to find their way.
Well, the only other thing I want to say, and I wrote it down so I would say it, and I don't think I have yet, is, well, Shane, will you read this off?
Yolotengo, Willem de Kooning.
Yolotengo equals Willem de Kooning, which is
interesting comparison. And why?
Why
would you say
that?
Why
were we talking about this earlier?
Well, I was thinking about it all day, and like,
you've been thinking about it all goddamn month,
all week. But no, I really like Willem de Kooning a whole bunch as opposed to, say, Jackson Pollock. Jackson Pollock threw a bunch of shit on the canvas and was listening to free jazz. And
I'm out.
There was no... Don't be a dick.
He's like... but sure. Like,
but
they,
no, there's an actual allegory here, and I'll get to it. Like, you know, like throwing a bunch of stuff out. But I like there to be a structure to something, but it to be bordering on cacophony. And Willem de Kooning did that really well in sort of an abstract expressionist way, but there was still, like, you could see a structure to it. And that's what I love about Yo La Tengo, is that they can, like, kind of take it to its nth degree edge, but there's still a structure to it. You can still tell there's a good song behind it.
Okay. Sorry I was giving you shit about this. I will say definitely, definitely, definitely. That's how I feel about the song Turn the Page. There's cacophony in there. There's inner turmoil in his mind.
Who the fuck? Are you talking about what's his fuck with the truck commercials?
Bob Seger?
We have to go now.
Yeah, so that might signal the end of the podcast.
There's some turmoil in his mind, but you still have a rock solid song there.
Yeah.
All right, so... So, worth noting that next week we're going to have a guest. We'll welcome Mark Kuvion into the fold. He's going to sit down and join us next week. Usually we preview what we're going to talk about next week at the tail end of these podcasts. I think this time we might. Are we in agreement? You want to leave that up in the air, so maybe
no.
We'll let Mark pick it? Or do
yeah,
you want
to... I mean, so it was my pick next week, which is going to be My Bloody Valentine, Loveless.
We'll push that back in the
right,
week.
So we'll go ahead and let Mark pick.
But I still have the single for next week, right?
Oh, no, you still have that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So that's going to be Skilo's I Wish.
Okay.
That's it. Damn good underrepresented song.
Not for long.
And then, well, wait a minute. So I always want to hear what's going to come up in a couple of weeks. So Mark is going to pick, and then it'll be MBV. But so you're next after that. What do you know what you want to have in a couple?
No,
of weeks?
I've been thinking on it hard, and I'm not quite there yet. I do want to maybe take a different tack from the last, like, so in the last couple of records that I've shared, we did the new Ty Siegel record, mm-hmm. which was like we hadn't done anything that was totally like that was currently out before, so I was really happy to do that. And then we've done this circle of things that one of the three of us knew well and liked, and that will continue. So I assume that we're going to move into new territory after that, and I've thought a little bit about it, but
You've got a couple weeks.
Yeah, I'm going to percolate on that just a little bit more.
Well, I'm going to let you guys know after in 2 weeks, regardless of what the album's going to be, I'm just going to let you guys know what my song pick for a few minutes with is.
Oh, God.
Well, no, don't be scared. It's Billy Ocean's Get Out of My Dreams.
Oh, yeah. Okay, that's great.
So all you have to do is it's
sure.
No.
Three minutes.
Yeah.
We're getting in there.
Okay.
It was either going to be that or Straight Up by Paula Abdul, which might make its way back in there. But I don't know. For some reason, I'm into mid to late 80s R&B right now.
All right. Well, we got plenty of time. This was a fun one, you guys. And Ryan, like, thanks for suggesting the record. I do feel like I know, like, I know the Yo La Tengo work that I have seen or have heard before. But I hadn't gotten to know this record very well before you picked this one. So thanks for sharing it with us.
Yeah, I just heard it this week.
Yes. And, you've
done such a good job of research.
Ryan performed this entire podcast like he had a happy gun to his
went
head.
Into a cocoon and just listened to it.
Joked up. He's never even heard it before. It's a bugger and the badger.
Oh, good Lord. All right, you guys.
Howard Stern rules.
I'm Kevin.
I'm Ryan.
I'm Shane.
This is Somebody Likes It.